Well, the clock on the wall says we're running about 2 minutes late. So you know what they say about that. If you start late, you have to finish early. So I'm going to have to do a whole lot of talking. Well, see, if you start, don't look at me like that, Nona. If you start early, you have to finish late, you know. Okay, we are in the book of Genesis. We've been discussing Abraham. As we started out, I kind of wanted to emphasize that there's no way we are going to cover every facet and everything that happened in Abraham's life. But what we did do is we kind of took a look at first some kind of background, which was really quick because you don't know much about Abraham. But we looked at a couple of other aspects about the character of Abraham because he obeyed God. And where we kind of we kind of left off on that point is that he gave up something that was certain in his life to get something that was uncertain. He gave up that which he could see for the unseen. Boy, what a powerful thing, and what a great gesture of faithfulness that he had there, that he would be willing to leave everything that he had and to go where God, in fact, God didn't even tell him initially where he was going to be going. And then we went into a section here that we want to talk a little bit more about. I don't want to spend a whole lot more time on it, but Abraham and his failed faith. And the reason that I like to bring this in on Abraham is because sometimes if we are not careful, we look back and we find these people, in fact, that's where we started out, Hebrews 11, 8 and 9, Hebrews chapter 11, verse 17. We look at these people, and especially those as we look into Hebrews chapter 11, and we refer to that sometimes as the heroes of the faith or the hall of the hero, whatever you came to grow or learn that by. And we have a tendency, if we're not careful, to kind of put these people up on a pedestal that they really don't belong. And I'm not taking anything away from Abraham. I'm not taking away from anything of any of the people that are listed in this hall of heroes of the faith that we see in Hebrews chapter 11. So I'm not trying to do that at all. But we do need to recognize that they were people just like you and I are. And I think from my point of view, I'm glad that we're given those kind of examples, because what that tells me is if Abraham could live a life, though it wasn't flawless, it wasn't perfect, could live a life that his name would be recorded in the greatest book ever penned on the face of this earth, the Bible, and it was there for all generations until the end of this world. You know, that tells me something. If he can do that, if he can live that faithfully, even though he had shortcomings, I can too. You think about King David. And it says that David was a man after God's own heart. And yet we know that David had shortcomings. He had failings. And yet so we see that when we read the Bible, yes, these are great people in so many ways, but don't put them up on such a pedestal to think that they didn't ever fail, because they did. Now, we talked about Genesis chapter 12, verses 10 through 20, and then Genesis chapter 20, and we didn't try to read everything into that. But remember that there was two occasions in which Abraham recognized the beauty of Sarah. And this always amazes me, because Sarah was no spring chicken at the time this was taking place. You know, he was no spring rooster, so to speak, okay? They were getting up in their years, and yet the Bible even talks in objective terms that she was beautiful. She was recognized as being a beautiful woman, even at that point in time in her life. And so you look at that, and some people might say, well, no wonder Abraham would say what he did. Well, be sure you tell them that you're my sister, because if indeed you tell them, we tell Pharaoh, we tell Abimelech that you are my wife, They're going to kill me so that they can have you. And yet stop and think about it. Abraham did not have the kind of faith at this point in time that he should have had. He had, isn't it amazing to you, to me or to you, that you look at Abraham and you realize what had already been promised Abraham? A great, great heritage of people, descendants, so many, that would come through Abraham. And yet this was a point in time when they even had not even had children yet. And God said, but still, I want you to get up and go. And he gets up and he goes. And God makes a promise to him in chapter 12 that you're going to have descendants after descendants on top of descendants. And then the first time that faith is really tried on that, instead of saying, God promised me this, God hasn't lied to me at this point. Why wouldn't he just go ahead and say, yes, Sarah is my wife? In fact, in both the case of Pharaoh and Abimelech, they chastise Abraham. You could have caused me to sin. In the case of Abimelech, God actually, it talks about the intervention of God into this and stopping Abimelech from sinning against God. So here we have a situation where, and by the way, when you go over to Genesis chapter 20, let's see, should have marked that, verse 12, back up a little bit. Then verse 10, then Abimelech said to Abraham, what did you have in view that you have done this thing? And Abraham said, because I thought surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will kill me on account of my wife. But indeed, now listen, she is truly my sister. She is the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. That sounds a little bit strange for us this day and age, but not then. That was not an uncommon thing. So we talked about the question, put the question mark out there. In fact, I even challenged us to think a little bit about this. You know, where was his failure? Because clearly, he did not lie in the sense that he told both Pharaoh and Abimelech, she is my sister. There was truth in that. We talked about the fact that there is actually no such thing as a half-truth, not in reality. In fact, the very construction of saying something like that doesn't really make sense. Because we know from 1 John 2:21 that no lie is of the truth. In other words, if I tell the truth, if there's a lie couched in that, then it no longer becomes the truth. I've corrupted it. I've changed something to where it is no longer the truth. So the concept of a half-truth isn't really even true. You see, I may not tell everything about something. I may leave something out, but what I do tell is 100% the truth. Now, what was the problem with Abraham here? In fact, stop and think about this. Did he not also bring his wife Sarah in on this mess by saying, you also tell him? You tell him that this is the case. So what was he guilty of? I mean, other than, how about this? A lack of faith in God. That was the number one to me. What was he guilty of? Okay, there's the word I'm looking for. He was deceitful. Now, let me say something here so that people don't leave here going, boy, that horse has lost his mind. Okay, but I want to ask you a question here. He was guilty of deception. Is all deception necessarily sinful? Think real hard before you answer it within yourself. Is all deception necessarily sinful?
We have the example of Jacob and Esau.
Okay.
His mother.
That, and it became hurtful on that case. You know, it's a hard question because what our natural response is, and I want to qualify this, our natural response is, well, of course, all deception is sinful. Because you're deceiving people. But I also want us to think in terms of different methods of deception that may not necessarily be sinful. Now, we can sin in deceiving people. There's no argument there. What I want to introduce here is a thought about this. How many people here served in the military? Okay, getting some hands popping up there. Anybody in the Army or the Marines? Okay, we got a couple here. All right. Question mark. Were there ever times when our military would require you to wear camo so you could not be seen?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Blending in.
Okay, blending in? I like that answer. Okay, you're blending in, but what is the purpose of blending in? To deceive your enemy into thinking that you are not really there.
I don't know if you call this deception, but Paul says to the Jew, I was a Jew, to the Greek, I was a Greek. You know,
well, yeah, we could go off on that a little bit, maybe in a different direction at some point. I would just simply say what he's saying there, that he became all things to all men, is that he didn't deceive somebody into thinking that he was not what he was. He was a Christian, and he was going to preach and teach the gospel. It's just that when tradition would cause him or need him to do something to get into this element here and preach and teach the truth, he could do that. And likewise over here. But here's another example that I was thinking about. Turn over in your Bible to the book of Joshua chapter 8. Now, I want to really emphasize to people here, I am in no way advocating that we be deceitful. In fact, I think as Christians, we have a responsibility to be as straightforward as we can possibly be at all times. Be as honest as we can possibly be at all times. Not deceive people. But let's start off with verse 1 of chapter 8. Now the Lord said to Joshua, do not be afraid. Now, by the way, this is the context is Achan had been punished. Okay, because they had been defeated at Ai, because he had taken forbidden treasure, hidden it in his tent, all this kind of stuff, and now they're going to go up against Ai again. So it's the second time at Ai. Now the Lord said to Joshua, do not be afraid nor be dismayed. Take all the people of war with you and arise and go up to Ai. See, I have given into your hand the king of Ai, his people, his city, and his land. And you shall do to Ai and its king as you did to Jericho and its king. Only its spoil and its cattle, you shall not take his booty for yourself. Listen, lay an ambush for the city behind it. Let's go down. Let's just skip for the time being. Skip verse 3. Verse 4. Here is Joshua commanding them, saying, behold, you shall lie in ambush against the city, behind the city. We could go to others. Go to verse 15, though. Skip down to verse 15. And Joshua and all Israel made as if they were beaten before them. They were practicing a form of deception, but it was God-authorized deception. You see, we have an element, unfortunately, in the brotherhood right now who believes in authorized deception. In other words, they say, based upon passages like this, and we'll read a little bit more in just a moment, passages like this, that you as a Christian can practice deception if you think it's going to gain you some sort of advantage here or there, like in a discussion or something like that. The problem with that is you can never know if they're really telling you the truth about something. You can never really know if they are practicing this, quote, authorized deception. And therefore, you can't really ever trust what they say. That's why I say we need to be extra, extra careful that we don't automatically throw everything into the realm, all deception into the realm of sin, because here God is actually telling them you need to actually deceive them. What do you do when you set up an ambush? You have people hidden that cannot be seen, and your enemy does not know they're there until the last second. Here is God actually telling Joshua, do this. Joshua tells his people to do this. And then in verse 15, it says, and Joshua and all Israel made as if they were beaten before them. That's another form of deception. And the Lord, verse 18, said to Joshua, stretch out your spear that is in your hand toward Ai, and I will give it into your hand. In other words, you do this, and this will be fulfilled. Ai will be yours. Yes, ma'am.
I thought I heard you say that not to take of the booty.
I'm sorry, say again?
That not to take of the booty, but that's not what it says.
No. Oh, okay. It says, let me go back and read that again. Maybe I read it wrong.
Yeah.
Only its spoils and its cattle you shall take as booty for yourself. Okay, I probably did read that wrong. Okay, I apologize for that. But the first time, remember, they were not to take anything. So that corrects that. Okay, but my point in this is we automatically want to categorize this as being something that is necessarily in and of itself wrong. And I'm going to say this again, because as Christians, we ought to be doing everything within our power to present that proper example to the world. We should not practice deception. We should never let anybody think that, hey, I'm going to try to gain some sort of advantage over you by sneaking something in the back door, so to speak. We have that responsibility, but we do need to realize that every day, and I thought another one too, I don't know where this idea, I don't know how they do this, but we know about all these stealth fighter planes and bombers and stuff. That's actually practicing a form of deception. They build these things and then coat those planes with a type of paint that is reflects the radar. Or absorbs it, or whatever it does. I guess it absorbs it, doesn't reflect it back. And oddly enough, that actually is a form of deception. Now, nobody here is going to say, well, everybody in the military is a bunch of deceitful liars. Well, of course not. So, at any rate, yes, James.
I wanted to make a comment on what you said. Because you said where they practice some form of deception and creep in through the back door.
Uh-huh.
Whatnot. Like you said earlier, you know, how can you ever really know when they're telling the truth? You can trust them. Not only that, if it's something that you're going to practice to do, then it becomes the point that you will start deceiving yourself.
That's a good point. You know, there is no greater deception in the world than self-deception. Or should I say no worse of a deception. When you get to the point where you lie to yourself, you deceive yourself about things. That's an excellent point, James, because, you know, when you can't trust somebody, that's why I emphasize, and I'll emphasize again, always live in such a way that you don't practice deception. You're not deceitful toward people. But at the same time, let's also be careful that we don't automatically categorize something until we've really examined it. Then after you've examined it, you say, okay, that turned out to be sinful. That was wrong. But like in this case here in Joshua chapter 8, God's the one who actually authorizes it. Tells them what to do. So we got to be careful that we don't categorize everything. We have to examine them carefully, look at it carefully. Okay, I probably spent more time on that than I originally planned. Yes, ma'am.
Question.
That's okay.
So is there a form of deception that does not include a lie?
I will say it this way. All lies deceive, but not all deceptions are lies. Does that make sense?
Are you sure?
I'd hold to that one.
Is it possible to outwit somebody without lying?
Yeah. I would think you could outwit them.
Outsmart them without telling an untruth?
Yeah, I think you could probably do that. But again, that's why I'm saying it's such a fine line on some things. We don't really have we may not always have the proper judgment in order to try to do that. That's why I'm saying I'm trying to think of a situation where you could say, yes, all lies are a practice of deceiving, but not just because you deceive somebody doesn't make you a liar. Does it make all of our men and women over in the battle zones and stuff like that liars because they're wearing camouflage?
No. That's the point that I'm making is that it is possible to deceive, or the question is, I should say, then, is it possible to deceive without lying?
Yes, I think Abraham is a classic example of that. He told the truth, did he not? About his wife being... Okay, well, let me ask you.
That's a form of lying, not telling the whole truth.
Okay, if that is true, let me think this through. Okay, if that is true, I keep going back to the military for some reason. Do generals and stuff lie when they don't tell the colonels everything about a battle plan, and the colonels don't tell everything to the majors, and the majors don't tell everything to the captains, and the captains all the way down to the private, because the private doesn't know everything that the general knows? Is he lying? Is there a need-to-know basis?
Yes, it is when the situation requires them that they know information, just like
needed
to know that that was why.
Okay.
That was perfect information.
It was pertinent information, but for the sake of the argument, what I'm answering your question, that doesn't necessarily apply to Abraham and Sarah here. There is a thing called, and Victor, I've seen your hand. Hang on just a moment. Keep that in mind. My mind's older. I'll lose mine faster. But there's a thing called need-to-know basis. The general knows everything about a battle plan. And y'all will know what I mean by this. The grunt in the field, he doesn't know hardly anything about it. There's a need to know basis. Even like a captain may not know everything about the battle plan. What is pertinent to him, he's given. This is what you need to know about the battle plan. You're here for a particular reason, but you don't necessarily, that captain doesn't necessarily know what all these people over here are doing under a different captain. And that captain doesn't know what his major knows, and so on up the line. But you're right. Now that does not apply, and that's where the deceitfulness of Abraham got him in trouble, is because it was pertinent to the whole picture. Now he didn't lie about it; he just didn't tell him pertinent information. That's an excellent point on that. I would agree 100% on that. Yes, Victor.
Well, an example that we've all done at some point, I'm guessing, is. When you leave, go out of town, leave your lights on.
Okay.
Make people think you might be home.
So, okay.
But just to check your home.
Yeah, but you're not lying about anything.
Right.
You're trying to give the appearance that there may be somebody home so that nobody will, or at least give people a second thought about breaking in. Yes, babe, did you have something? Good point, by the way, Victor. Excellent. An analogy
part
there.
Part of the problem with Abraham's deception and his lack of fully disclosing everything, he exposed his wife to being put in a sinful situation.
Yes.
Abimelech and I forget the other guy.
Pharaoh, yes.
And he was messing with God's plan because God's plan was that Sarah and he would have a son.
Yeah. And And if he had just had the kind of faith that he would have had, he would have never gone that route. He would have simply said, yeah, God promised this. It hasn't happened yet, so it's got to happen somewhere down the line. And see, that's where the next failure comes. Abraham and Sarai showed a tremendous lack of faith when she gave Hagar to Abram as her handmaid to Abram in order to produce a child, which they did, Ishmael. And that was after God had already promised way back in Genesis chapter 12, this is going to be taken care of, Abraham. Listen to me. Pay attention. There was a lack of faith on the part of Abraham. That's all this what I was going with here was a lack of faith here in Abraham. It wasn't necessarily that he lied. He just didn't disclose everything he should have. And you're right. That made him wrong on that point. Yes?
I was going to ask how many years approximately, and he, from the time he was called till this occurs, do you know?
Well, he was
like a babe in Christ. He was still developing as a child of God.
Well, that's true. I think he was like 70. Isn't that where I think? I don't know why 70 is sticking in my mind. And they did not have the child until she was 90, and he was, or he was 99, or whatever. How I always have to go back and reread that. But so you're right about that. But again, I think what this boils down to is he did not have the kind of faith that he needed to have. They didn't have the kind of faith they needed to have. And by the way, who came out of Ishmael? You don't think we're not paying for that today? Uh-huh. Yep. Out of Ishmael comes this great nation of people that ultimately, in time, turned into the Arab nation, and then, of course, what we see now in Islam, the religion that we have out there now. So we're paying dearly for it, for that sin.
Well, just everything in a nutshell, if we don't have the faith we should have, we will, so many times trying to deceive if we don't have the faith that we need to work on and have.
I would say
we won't tell everything we know, or we won't tell exactly what we know.
Yeah.
So that's
we don't trust God's word enough, maybe. Yeah, I think that's a possibility. I don't think that's a necessary result of a lack of faith. The lack of faith can manifest itself in various ways, but that would certainly be one of them. And as again, you know, we have a great example here with Abram. He did not have the kind of faith that he should have had. And so what does he do? He deceives two people, put their life in danger against God, involves his own wife into the deception, you know, which maybe she should have had a stronger faith too. I don't know. All I'm saying is it is never a good thing. So again, let me reemphasize that. I am not advocating that we be deceitful under any circumstances. We should always be upfront. I just wanted to jog our thinking a little bit here, because there have been a lot of people who have come out and they will point blank say, yes, Abraham lied here. He didn't lie. And the text of Genesis chapter 20 verse 12 proves that he did not lie. But boy, did he deceive people that could have gotten them in trouble. And that's a danger. Okay, let's talk about the faithful part. This is the easy part, okay? We've gotten through the tough part. Genesis chapter 15, verse 6 tells us that Abraham, listen, believed in the Lord, and it was imputed or accounted to him for righteousness. You know, we've talked about some of these things before, that if you could have had just one or two things, like if your tombstone, when we pass from this life and you've got that headstone there, and there's always the typical stuff on it, you know, your name on it and when you were born and when you passed away and all that. But if they could put something else on it, wouldn't that be a lot right there? He, she believed in the Lord. Yes, Methodist.
I see what happened with Abraham was a showing of God's power, because if he didn't do what he did, then the situation wouldn't happen. But God showed his power to Abimelech, to Pharaoh, because of the way Abraham presented things, it wouldn't have happened if Abraham hadn't done what he did.
That's a good point, but I don't know that it was ever in Abraham's mind that if I'll say it this way or if I'll do it this way, God can show his power. It turns out for that, that's an excellent thought. That's a good point. I hadn't thought about it like that. But it does show the majesty and power of God, doesn't it?
Yeah, I just remove the ability. I'm not going to mess with Abraham because
yeah.
God jumped in there and said, hey, this is my God.
That is exactly right. That's an excellent point.
They could have been obliterated by Pharaoh.
Yeah.
And would have presented Sarah as his wife.
Yeah, and even if he had presented Sarah in both cases as his wife and they stayed away, they would have still never learned about the sovereignty and power of God, would they? But it's just what I don't think that was part of his thinking, like, hey, I can help Pharaoh and Abimelech see that God is powerful.
Well, but so we don't know why God does the thing he does sometimes. You know, he uses people for his purpose that we might not understand at that time. But every time the situation was over, Abraham was built up. He was given money. He was given animals. He was, you know,
okay.
He built his tribe to God's purpose.
Okay. So we have the failures. We recognize those. But we also have the faith of Abraham. It was based upon what? Obedience to God's will. You know, every time it never fails that when we do what God tells us to do, though we may not see the outcome right now, we may not always see immediately that, okay, I did what God said to do, and here's the positive response, or not response, not the word I'm looking for. Here's the positive outcome. We may not always see that. But I think if we could have some good 20/20 hindsight and look back, I think we can honestly say every time I did what God said to do, and the way that God said to do it, it worked out okay. It didn't mean there weren't some bumps in the road. You know, anybody who doesn't think we're going to have bumps in the road as a Christian hasn't studied the Bible, hasn't really looked into what the Bible teaches. So, you know, but the truth of the matter is that Abraham's faith was based upon God's will and then following God's will. I mean, obedience, simply put, does what God says to do. That same faith must work in us too. You know, when we go to God's word and it says, this is what I want you to live like, here's what I expect you to be, guess what? We need to be that. We need to do that. And when we do, ultimately, it's going to work out. Put your faith in God that when God says to do it, God has never told man to do anything that was not right for him. You can't find anywhere in the scriptures where God said, now, and I'll just pull a name out of the clear blue sky here, somebody like Ezekiel. Ezekiel, if you go and do this, things would work out well for you. And Ezekiel went and did it, and the whole world fell apart. You can't find that. When God says to do something and do it in a certain way, when we do that something, we do it that certain way, every single time a positive result is going to come out of it. We may not always see it immediately. We may not even always see the end result. But it doesn't mean that God gave us bad information. So that's where our faith comes in. Where it says, whatever I do, do it with a faith based upon what God said. What God said, that's what I'm going to do. If God said it, then it's right to do. He's never given bad information. We see Abraham leaving Haran, where his father Terah was buried. Listen, again, not knowing where he was going. Did Abraham understand why God was sending him out without a map, as we might think of it? I'm going to guess probably not. I don't imagine that God, outside of what we have in the scripture, I'm not sure that God ever came up to Abraham and said, okay, Abraham, I want you to go. I won't tell you where you're going right now. But I promise you, this, and this is going to happen. Or here's a map for you to follow. He didn't do that. You see, even if I don't always understand why God commands something, obedient faith will still cause me to obey God's commandment. An obedient faith. And when you stop and look at the book of Hebrews, that's all that's about. Yes, by faith, Abraham did this. What? He did it. By faith, Noah built an ark to the saving of his family. That was action. That's obedience. God said, build the ark. He did it. And on and on and on we have through the Hebrews chapter 11. Abram had faith in God to provide for him when there was strife between him and his nephew Lot's herdsman. Genesis chapter 13. Remember what ultimately took place here? Abraham says, we don't need to have the strife between you and me and your herdsman and my herdsman. And basically he said, you Lot, decide on the land that you want to take. And Lot looked out and he thought he was getting the best of the best. That which was up against two cities. Guess what? Just end up getting them in trouble. Left Abraham that which probably was less appetizing, less appealing. Lot took the better looking land. It was well watered everywhere. Genesis chapter 13 verse 10 tells us. Well watered. Abraham took the least desirable land, and then God reaffirms the land and the descendant promise of Genesis chapter 12 in Genesis 13 verses 14 through 17. Reaffirmed it for him. In other words, you did what was right. Abraham, you didn't get the best land, but I'm still going to take care of you. Possibly, I'll just say possibly, the greatest test of Abraham's faith was to offer Isaac up as a sacrifice. I have wrestled with this for so many times because I have two kids by natural means, biological children. We adopted a third. And if God had told me to do that, I think Royce's faith would have probably been found nowhere near me. I'd hate to say that the truth. I'd hope I could say the other way around. But think about what God asked him to do. If you don't have children, you will maybe one of these days. You'll understand. That would be a hard, hard thing to do. And yet, what does Abraham do? Yep. He goes up to where he is told to build that altar. Isaac is on the altar. He is ready, as it were, to plunge that dagger into his own son. Yes.
What would have happened had Abraham received another message from God for another sacrifice from his son? Don't you think his son would be kind of scared about this?
Okay, and you know, here's the truth of the matter is, sometimes we have a picture in our mind of Isaac as being this little bitty kid. No, he wasn't. He was a full-grown man, young man. He was able to carry the wood for the sacrifice on his back. He was asking questions. I'm sure what was going through Isaac's mind, said, okay, Dad, I'm looking around and we've got the wood, we've got the altar, we've got everything we need. Where is the sacrifice? And what did Abraham tell him? God's going to take care of this. God will provide. And wonder what he thought about when he was put upon that altar himself. You know, maybe if I'd have been Isaac, I might have been the world's fastest person on earth at that time. I'd been heading down that hill like nobody's business.
Right.
You know, but you stop and think about that. That's the greatest test of Abraham's faith. And I think we can't.
What about Isaac's faith?
That's what I was pointing out. Yeah, because if I'd have been Isaac, you'd have seen me going down that mountainside just as fast as I could run. He's had to submit himself. That's a perfect picture, Nona, of somebody who says, okay, you know what? Dad says God will provide. I'm good with that. Whatever is necessary. Like I said, I'd have sprouted feathers and gone clucking down the road. I'd have been chickening out there. Yes.
You know, I was going to say, Isaac may have had the same kind of faith that his father had.
Yeah.
Because Abraham told the servants that went with him, wait here, we will go yonder and worship. And we will return to you.
Yeah.
Isaac may have had the same faith. I don't know.
Yeah. That's the point. He may have had just as strong of a faith as his dad. In fact, stop and think about it. Maybe he had a stronger faith in some senses, because you're the one who's going to have that knife plunged into you to let the blood. Yes, James.
We can also say, to add to that most likely Abraham was that example for Isaac to have that faith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's important, you know, for, like, especially me, father with young kids, you know, to be that example.
Be that example.
Kids do have that.
Yeah. And show our children, and in some of our cases, our grandchildren, that's fine too. Show your grandchildren that you have a faith in God that can't be shaken. That you have the same kind of faith that others have had in the past. And, you know, I do kind of joke about it a little bit, but I always hope that I would have the same kind of faith that they did. I would hope that I had that kind of backbone about me, says that, you know, God's never failed me before. I'm going to do what God tells me to do. And you know what? In the end analysis, what if it does cost me my life?
You're with him.
If I am faithful, if I'm living as faithful as I'm supposed to be living, guess where I'm going to go? I like what Mike said that one time about, you know, what if the plane is going down? That don't worry about me. He says, because the plane goes down, I'm going right back up. You know, and that's how our attitude ought to be, isn't it? You know, no matter what happens, if I'm living faithfully, I'm going to be right back. I'm going to be where I'm going to be the happiest and the best. I think we're through. I know we are. I appreciate your time and your